Fabian. The Duchess will feed it pepper, or it might turn into a pig because it knows no better. No room, no room, no room, no room at the table. Adding another ounce might make one too many and the teapot empty. Not enough crumpets to go round. Don't bring another baby in. The Duchess will feed it pepper, or it might turn into a pig because it knows no better. No room, no room, no room. Holy is the fetus, but babies once born are simply human. And if they die in the streets of Calcutta, no one will notice but their mom. And ain't that just like a woman? Don't bring another baby in. The Duchess will feed it pepper, or it might turn into a pig because it knows no better. No room.
Eleanor Roosevelt was often asked if she had planned her careers and if she had had any specific objectives in her mind throughout her lifetime.
I am sure that my objectives, during those early years at least, were constantly changing. In the beginning, because I felt, as only a young girl can feel it, all the pain of being an ugly duckling, I was not only timid, I was afraid. Afraid of almost everything, I think. Afraid of my own inadequacy. My chief objectives as a girl was to do my duty. This had been drilled into me as far back as I could remember. Not only my duty as I saw it, but my duty as laid down for me by other people. It never occurred to me to revolt. Anyhow, my own overwhelming need in those days was to be approved, to be loved, and I did whatever was required of me, hoping it would bring me nearer to the approval and love I so much wanted. As a young woman, my sense of duty remained as strict and rigid as it had been when I was a girl, but it had changed its focus. My husband and my children became the center of my life, and their needs were my new duty. Duty was perhaps the motivating force in my life, often excluding what might have been joy or pleasure. I looked at everything from the point of view of what I ought to do, rarely from the standpoint of what I wanted to do. There were times I almost forgot that there was such a thing as wanting anything. So I took an interest in politics. It was a wife's duty to be interested in whatever interested her husband. I felt I must acquiesce in whatever he might decide and be willing to go to Albany. My part was to make the necessary household plans and to do this as easily as possible if he should be elected. I was having a baby. And for a time at least, that was my only mission in life. I was still timid, still afraid of doing something wrong, of making mistakes, of not living up to the standards required by my mother-in-law, or failing to do what was expected of me. As a result, I was so hidebound by duty that I became too critical, too much of a disciplinarian. I was so concerned with bringing up my children properly that I was not wise enough to just love them. It was not until I reached middle age that I had the courage to develop interests of my own, outside of my duties to my family. In the beginning, it seems to me now, beyond the interests themselves, in learning about people and conditions and the world outside our own United States. Almost at once, I began to discover that interest leads to interest. Knowledge leads to more knowledge. The capacity for understanding grows with the effort to understand.
In 1963, Betty Friedan completed a book entitled The Feminine Mystique. In it, she identified the dilemma of the contemporary middle-class American woman.
I came to realize that the problem that has no name was shared by countless women in America. It is no longer possible to ignore that voice, to dismiss that desperation of so many American women. I have heard so many women try to deny this dissatisfied voice within themselves because it does not fit the pretty picture of femininity the experts have given them. The feminine mystique says that the highest value and the only commitment for women is the fulfillment of their own femininity. It says that the great mistake of Western culture has been the undervaluation of this femininity. It says this femininity is so mysterious and intuitive and close to the creation and origin of life that man-made science may never be able to understand it. The mystique, says the mystique, the root of women's troubles in the past is that women envied men. Women tried to be like men instead of accepting their own nature, which can find fulfillment only in sexual passivity. But the new image this mystique gives to American women is the old image. Occupation, housewife. The feminine mystique is so powerful that women grow up no longer knowing that they have the desires and capacities the mystique forbids. It is my thesis that the core of the problem for women today is not sexual, but a problem of identity. A stunting or evasion of growth that is perpetuated by the feminine mystique. It is my thesis that as the Victorian culture did not permit women to accept or gratify their basic sexual needs, our culture does not permit women to accept or gratify their basic need to grow and fulfill their potentialities as human beings, a need which is not solely defined by their sexual role. There have been identity crises for man at all crucial turning points in human history. For the first time in their history, women are becoming aware of an identity crisis in their own lives, a crisis which began many generations ago and will not end until they or their daughters turn an unknown corner and make of themselves and their lives the new image that so many women now so desperately need.
The National Organization for Women, NOW, is a civil rights organization composed mostly of middle and upper class women and men. They fight within the system for legislative changes that will improve the status of women. Red Stockings, a collective organized in 1969, reflects another viewpoint about the plight of the contemporary woman.
Women are an oppressed class. Our oppression is total, affecting every facet of our lives. We are exploited as sex objects, breeders, domestic servants, and cheap labor. We are considered inferior beings whose only purpose is to enhance men's lives. Our humanity is denied. Our prescribed behavior is enforced by the threat of physical violence.
In reality, every relationship between a man and a woman is a class relationship, and the conflicts between individual men and women are political conflicts that can only be solved collectively.
We identify the agents of our oppression as men,
Male supremacy is the oldest, most basic form of domination. All other forms of exploitation and oppression, racism, capitalism, imperialism, etc., are extensions of male supremacy. Men dominate women. A few men dominate the rest. Men have controlled all political, economic, and cultural institutions through history and backed up this control with physical force. They have used this power to keep women in an inferior position. All men receive economic, sexual, and psychological benefits from male supremacy. All men have oppressed women.
Our chief task at present is to develop female class consciousness through sharing experience and publicly exposing the sexist foundation of all our institutions.
We define our best interest as that of the poorest, most brutally exploited woman. We repudiate all economic, racial, educational, or status privileges that divide us from other women. We call on all our sisters to unite with us in this struggle. We call on all men to give up their male privileges and support women's liberation in the interest of our humanity and their own. The time for individual skirmishes is past. This time we are going all the way.
Hello, and welcome to Women Today. This is Lee Merriweather. Our program is furnished as a special service by Haynes Hosiery, makers of Alive Support Pantyhose for women who work hard, play hard, and enjoy being alive. Publishers these days are spending a good bit of time revising their teaching materials to change the old role stereotyping of the past in which all little boys wanted to grow up to be firemen or doctors or aviators, and all little girls stayed home cooking and sewing. They're making changes in adult books, too. And in the future, you're not likely to come upon a sentence such as this again. A good congressman is a man of the people. What will you be reading in place of such a sentence? To find out, we've talked with someone who's very much involved in contemporary language trends. She's not only executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, but one of the authors of the Guidelines for Equal Treatment of the Sexes in McGraw-Hill Book Company Publications. Her name is Alma Graham, and I'll start out by asking what the overall principles are behind the guidelines.
We want to provide the widest possible range of options for boys and girls, for young men and women, in their lifestyles and in their career choices. So to do this, we want to avoid the stereotypes that have limited them in the past.
We asked her to give some specific examples of changes she recommends.
Well, we are recommending greater inclusion of women in all subject areas, and we're recommending that women be shown in a number of occupations, that they be shown at all occupational levels, including the top levels, that men as well be shown in non-traditional occupations, that women can be accountants and company presidents and bank presidents, and men can be kindergarten teachers or secretaries. So that we get some sense of the fact that these aren't well stereotyped. And then we have a number of specific examples concerning language. We want to treat men and women in an equal way. So, for example, that pioneers moved west taking their wives with them as though pioneers were men, but pioneer men and women moved west, or pioneer families moved west. The women also were pioneers.
What does Alma Graham suggest using in place of terms such as man in the street, working man, and even mankind?
The man in the street is the average person or the ordinary citizen. Mankind is humankind, human beings, men and women, the human race. And the working man is the working person or the worker, the wage earner.
Finally, we asked if her guidelines have to do with role stereotypes too, or just language.
No, they have to do with role stereotypes very much, and I think the language aspect has been emphasized, and that's good, but it shouldn't be forgotten that we're talking about equal opportunities in education and employment and careers for young people, and that we're deeply concerned that they will have a wider choice of lifestyles. They will feel free to remain single or to marry without having children or to have children and work outside the home, to have a greater share in the child-rearing responsibilities between the two parents, to break stereotypes so that any individual can follow the career choice that she or he feels most qualified for.
Our guest today has been Alma Graham, talking about the guidelines being used by publishers today to ensure equal treatment of the sexes in their new books. Our program has been furnished as a special service by Haynes Hosiery, makers of Alive Support Pantyhose for women who work hard, play hard, and enjoy being alive. And now this is Lee Merriweather saying goodbye.
Well, hello. That was, as she said, Lee Merriweather, a show called Women Today from the album prepared for broadcast on October 14th, 1975. This is WBAI in New York, listener-sponsored non-commercial radio, 99.5 FM. And this show, Heresy, was certainly not brought to you by any pantyhose company. If you would like to become a subscriber to BAI, seeing as how we do not take money, operating expenses from places like pantyhose companies and feminine hygiene product companies and places like that, there is a toll-free number to call. I hope it's in process right now, 1-800-828-1700. 800-828-1700. And you can call and pledge to WBAI anytime, day or night, 24 hours. We are at your service. Or they, answering the phones on the other end, not us, are at your service. You've been listening to Heresy, and boy, have you ever. This was a capsule lesson in women's history through the voices of women, through the readings and speeches, writings and speeches of women as read by other women. We went from 1642 to 1975, passing through people like Abigail Adams, Sarah Grimke, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Sojourner Truth, Lucretia Mott, Lucy Stone, Elizabeth Blackwell, Carrie Chapman, Cat, Jane Addams, Mother Jones, Emma Goldman, Betty Friedan, The Red Stockings, Margaret Sanger. Many women, many lives, many generations. Next week on Heresy, it is a free-form show. I will be bringing more literature and music to the air, more women's art, non-visual art. Verbal and oral, A-U-R-A-L, art. Oral, too, perhaps. Oral, tradition, storytelling. I have been and will continue to be Sharon Griffiths. This has been and will continue to be Heresy. And ditto for the fact that this is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, 6:54 on a Sunday morning, St. Patrick's Day, even though the parade was yesterday. And coming up next, after Alice Coltrane leaves us with Isis and Osiris, Through the Opera Glass. See you next week. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Edward.